Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Well, today we're joined by Dave Revson, who's the lead studio host of the Big Ten Network. How's everything going with you?
It is going fabulously. What's going on in Iowa City today?
A lot of coldness. That's about it.
And no, the Purdue game tonight.
Okay, Iowa, and Purdue. The Purdue game.
Yeah, true, you cannot. We're recording today, January 27th. I'm going to the game, and I'm going to admit it right off the top. I'm a senior. This is the first Iowa basketball game I've been to. So I just want to get that out there.
Wait, it's the very first one, Jack, that you've been to?
Men's. Very first men's. I haven't been to men's game.
In 4 years?
Yeah. Well, you also got to remember, Dave, we've had the COVID years.
One COVID year.
Look, I'm not a big basketball guy. I'll be the first to come out here and say it. If I had to choose between football and basketball, I'm getting football.
Jack,
tickets.
I have an even better question for you. Have you ever been to a Big Ten tailgate broadcast?
I mean, haven't we only had? We did have two. I
went to the one freshman year. Remember?
I looked at the one this year. I just looked at it from a distance, and I walked into Brugger's Bagels and got a bagel and a coffee. So
I just want you to know, Dave, I've come out to support.
You were there.
Yes.
I thought that was you. I thought I saw you. I said, that guy looks really familiar when you popped up. I think he was at tailgate once.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much for joining us. So my first question for you, actually, speaking of Big Ten basketball and stuff, is you've gotten to cover a lot of Big Ten basketball, Big Ten football. What do you enjoy more, like, when you get to be at these different events and games? Is it the Big Ten basketball culture or Big Ten football?
I get asked that question a lot, Sammy. Not that it's not a great and creative question, but I have been asked it a lot, and I still have yet to come up with a convincing answer. I really like them both. I mean, I think I just kind of, in the moment, that's what I'm into. My life tends to, certainly my professional life, is consumed by whatever season we're in. When you get into that kind of shoulder season of November and December, where they're both kind of going on, I would say my attention is probably focused more on football, but it's not necessarily because I like it more. It's just because I think it's more significant at that time. I will say kind of the rhythm of football I really like, that, you know, you kind of have all week to talk about the games and build up to them, and then it all builds to this kind of crescendo on Saturday. So I think from that point of view, maybe I like football better, just kind of the way that the kind of the week comes together. I mean, there's a Big Ten basketball game going on constantly. Like, whereas you said, we're recording on Thursday afternoon, Wisconsin is playing Nebraska right now. Like, I was watching the first half of that game and then came upstairs. I mean, it seems like there are constantly games going on. And I love that about it, that they're, you know, you kind of always have something to watch every single night. I don't think my wife loves it as much as I do, but I really enjoy kind of the nature of basketball happening pretty much every night.
So with football and basketball, one thing I was interested to ask you is, like, you know, each season there's turnover of coaches, players, all that stuff. And obviously being so tied into a singular conference, you kind of have to know all that information. So before each season, when do you start to really kind of dive into all the new rosters, all the, you know, schedules, everything like that?
I think it has changed pretty significantly here in the last few years, just with the transfer portal. It seems like it's much more of a revolving door. So I'd say I probably spend more time now in, like, maintenance than I did before, where I'm just kind of making sure I'm up to date on everything that's going on, and that you're aware of who's transferred in and who's transferred out. So I would say, whereas before, I, you know, maybe I started kind of middle of June, I'd start diving into football a little bit and try to spend a couple days on each team heading into Big Ten media days. I'd say now it's maybe a little bit more of an ongoing process than it was before.
You bring up the revolving door, and I feel like one that's been hurting my heart for a while has been the Chicago Bears, and they just hired their head coach. And I just want to get this in front because it just happened today. What are your thoughts on it? Because a lot of people are so blah right now being in Chicago, and I just want to know, like, what are your expectations kind of, and how were they met?
I have zero expectations, Jack. Okay. I have no expectations at all for the Bears. In a league that is premised on every team having equal opportunity to get good, and in fact, the bad teams getting serious advantages to improve themselves, it just seems like it's the same old story year in and year out, right? I mean, they're like overcoming the odds to be mediocre to bad every single year. So I don't know. I mean, I have no I wouldn't know Eberflus if he walked in, you know, my front door.
Me neither.
Okay. But that being said, I mean, I think there's a part of me that just feels like the game is so much about offense now that I did find it a little weird they went to a defensive guy, particularly when you drafted what you believe is a franchise quarterback a year ago and what I believe is a franchise quarterback after watching Justin Fields in the Big Ten. So I think a lot of it's going to be premised on who he hires as his offensive staff. It's not to say you can't win with a defensive coach, but it just feels to me like those are the really important hires. But I will hope springs eternal. I mean, you know, Sammy's got that Cubs flag next to him, right? I mean, certainly he knows about hope springs eternal. I mean, you just have to, if you didn't believe that somehow it's going to get better, you just abandon all hope, right? So hopefully it works out. I don't know.
I'm just saying, I hope for years and years the Cubs would win a World Series, and they did. So
they did.
Eventually it works. Yeah. Eventually
I heard about that. Despite being a White Sox fan, I did that. Information did trickle to me. Yeah.
No, I had to bring it up because there has just been such a pessimism today from Bears fans. And I feel like we've just been conditioned to always feel like that. And our expectations were, well, it can't get much worse. And who knows? Everybody feels like it will get worse. I for some reason, I feel like I'm of the minority of I'm an optimist right now. I'm so happy. Like we just got a new start. So I'm so happy. I don't know what your take was on it. Sam, I don't know what yours was. You were kind of iffy this morning, yeah, I think.
I was pessimistic.
Yeah. See, we need a breath of fresh air. And I think we got that. So that's all that was my expectation. I'm happy.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Hey, exactly. That's exactly. And that was.
That should fly on a flag in Soldier Field.
That was kind of the mindset this year. I feel like with Iowa basketball coming in, people really didn't know what to expect. And quite frankly, they're highly competitive. And without, you know, Luka and Joe, they're there. And I'm excited. I think that they could get one of their first big wins tonight. What do you think?
You're excited enough to get off your rear end and actually go to Carver Hawkeye.
That's the first right.
First time in 4 years.
That's right, Dave. That is exactly right. That is how stoked I am for tonight.
That's astounding. Well, now, whatever I say, right, I'm either going to be proven right or wrong. Like, when are you guys releasing this? I mean, is it coming out after the game?
I mean, we always sound wrong.
Can we record two different versions of it? Could I have
if you want.
Where, yeah, if you want to record two, we can do two.
One where I say I'm certain that Iowa is going to win because, man, that second half was amazing in West Lafayette, and they did it without Keegan Murray, and now they're going to have Keegan Murray. So certainly Iowa is going to win the game. Okay, we pause there.
Got that. Guys, I'll cut that one.
I know this would be a huge win for Iowa, but they just haven't beaten a team of this caliber this year. They don't have a quad one win yet. I think they're going to have a hard time keeping up with Jaden Ivey and his athleticism in the backcourt. And that twin tower, I mean, up front for Purdue, you know, I don't know how you deal with Travion Williams and Zach Edey, given the roster that Iowa has. So I'm convinced Purdue's going to win the game. All right, so edit it for me, and then we'll put the right one out there, and I'll look like a genius, right?
Look, my heart actually agrees with the latter of what you said. My eyes don't lie. They are way taller, and they're going to, I think, dominate us in the rebounding game, it feels like. I don't know what we'll have to give for Iowa to have to get into that, you know, rebounding game. They just, I don't know, they just don't have it.
They were an atrocious rebounding team at the beginning of the year. I do feel like they've gotten a little bit better here as Big Ten play has gone along. So it feels like Rabracha in particular has kind of figured it out a bit, elevating his game from the level he was at previously in North Dakota now to playing in the Big Ten. It does seem like he's come along. But they have good length. That was what was so confusing to me about their rebounding struggles. Certainly both of the Murrays have good size. You know, Patrick McCaffrey has nice size too. Rabracha, obviously. They're smaller in the backcourt. I think I was a little surprise. Iowa, for whatever reason under Fran, has just not been an overly physical team most of the time. They tend to be very good offensively and, you know, a pretty average defensive team. But I still think, you know, rebounding comes down to effort, and it feels like he lit a little bit of a fire under them and that they've responded here over the last few weeks.
So with Big Ten basketball kind of at the mid-season point, who are kind of some of the teams you've enjoyed watching this season, and who are some of the teams you're kind of hoping can really spotlight the Big Ten once the NCAA tournament rolls around?
Well, I think Iowa's just a little bit of a notch below kind of that top echelon. I think there's five teams that it wouldn't surprise me if any of the five won the Big Ten. I think Purdue and Illinois are probably the two most talented teams with the highest ceiling. I think Wisconsin is really good. They play great team basketball, and they have maybe the best player in the league in Johnny Davis, who is, you know, I think almost certainly a lottery pick. I think Ohio State is really good, too. I don't know that enough people talk about them. EJ Liddell is having a fabulous year. And then I think, you know, look, you just can't count out Tom Izzo and Michigan State. I think that team's a little bit flawed. I think they're kind of a roller coaster. You just don't know what you're going to get from week to week. And we were talking on our show yesterday. It feels like they kind of plug one hole and then another one shows up. You know, like the point guard play wasn't great for a while, and then it was okay. And, you know, then they weren't getting great play at the five spot. And then all of a sudden, you know, then Bingham's okay. You know, the shooting wasn't great, and then it is. I just feel like they're a tough team to read. But, you know, you look at what they did last week in, you know, kind of righting the ship against Wisconsin after the loss to Northwestern. And you just get the sense that, you know, Tom Izzo somehow by March figures this thing out. But I would put them in that group of five, but I'd probably put them the lowest among that group.
One question I have, and everybody was so high on Michigan, and I haven't really kept up with them, but what happened to Michigan? Like, what's going on with that?
Well, they played, I think they played a little bit better here over the last few games, Shaq. They've won three in a row. They had a really good win over Northwestern last night when Northwestern appeared to have them beat, and Michigan figured out a way. And you know, part of it, I think, is that they are just a young team. You know, Caleb Houston was a preseason All-Big Ten pick, and he's a freshman, and he's a guy reclassified, too. So he's a young freshman. He seems to be figuring it out. In these last three games, he's been shooting the ball at an amazing clip. Hunter Dickinson is really good and has started to play kind of like the guy that we saw a year ago. And then I also think, you know, kind of that the guard play, it felt like Eli Brooks was trying to shoulder a little bit too much of the burden early on. I don't think that Eli Brooks can be like a primary or secondary scoring threat in the Big Ten. I think he's better as a complementary player. And I think we're starting to see that. Devontae Jones, who transferred from Coastal Carolina, has elevated his game a little. So I just think when you're dealing with unknowns, whether it's transfers or whether it's freshmen, it's just harder to kind of get it right from the outset. But I think they're starting to figure it out. I mean, this Michigan team we've seen here over the last few games, I mean, they're not the number six team in the country as they were predicted to be at the beginning of the year, but they're good enough certainly to play in the NCAA tournament and maybe make some noise.
How many teams do you have going to the tournament this year from the Big Ten?
If you Well, I'm not a bracketologist. So
I'm curious because – For me, I have like six or seven.
I think it's more than that. So I would say it's the five we talked about. I think Iowa's going to go. I think Indiana's going to go. And then I think there's a good chance that Michigan figures it out and gets themselves in. So to me, that would be eight. It feels like it's kind of falling apart a little bit here for Rutgers. I at the beginning of the year, would have told you, I thought they were virtually a surefire team. And then beyond that, you know, Minnesota is stumbling a little bit, though they got a nice win over the weekend. I think those two are still in the conversation. And then the rest of them would really have to make a run here, whether it's Maryland or, you know, Northwestern has lost a million close games. They certainly have enough talent to make a run, but they just can't seem to close teams out. So, yeah, I guess I would say right now I think eight is probably a reasonable number.
So one question I had about your career working in sports media is you worked at ESPN for 11 years, I think, and then you made the transition to the Big Ten Network. What kind of led you to wanting to transition to the Big Ten Network and doing more of a regional, you know, Big Ten like conference rather than, you know, covering national championship games and doing more national type of work?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, Sammy. I think the biggest thing for me, well, I initially didn't want to do it. Like they reached out to me and expressed interest. And I just felt like, honestly, I've told this story before. I mean, like when you're in business, my contract was coming up and I was like, well, I might as well go see what these people are all about because, you know, maybe I'll get an offer and maybe it creates some leverage for me at ESPN to kind of improve my circumstance there. And you know, for me, that was mainly about kind of what I was going to be covering and what my role was going to be. And then I came and met with the Big Sky Network people, and I just had no idea really what it was. I didn't really understand that it was going to be a national network that was going to be going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I didn't understand the scope of how many games they were going to have on the air. I think I thought it was just going to be, you know, purely kind of afterthought games. But when they kind of expressed, well, this is, you know, this is how it's going to work. This is how many conference football games we're going to have in a given week. This is how many basketball games we're having. I kind of quickly realized that it was a pretty cool opportunity. And then I guess I didn't really understand, like, they wanted me to be like their centerpiece guy and the main, you know, face of this network. Lord knows why they would have chosen my face out of all the faces out there, but for some reason they did. And so I think when I kind of understood the scope of what we were talking about and then met with Commissioner Delaney, who I thought the world of from the get-go, Mark Silverman, who was the original president of the network, who now is one of the guys who runs Fox Sports, but I absolutely just thought the world of him. So it was just kind of this confluence of timing, being from Chicago, being a Big Ten guy, being a college sports guy, and then really understanding what they were offering me. I went from, well, why don't you just go and get a job offer and use that as a way to leverage your situation to, man, I think this could be a pretty cool job. And now we've gotten to the point where I've been at the Big Ten Network 15 years. So I've been there far longer than I was at ESPN. It's finally gotten to the point now. Well, it's been at this point, I think, for quite some time, certainly in the Midwest, where people identify me far more with that. You know, I used to go through 6-7 years ago, you'd go somewhere and someone's like, aren't you a guy on ESPN? I said, no, I used to be. And now it's much more the Big Ten Network. That's what people identify me with. And it's pretty cool to have been in on the ground floor. We really changed sports television. We changed the way that the college sports operate. And that part of it's been neat. And then it's just been, I think, really gratifying to really be more involved. I think one of the weird things, I love being at ESPN. I was certainly not one of those people that left with any kind of bitterness or rancor that a lot of people seem to have when they depart ESPN, sometimes very publicly. I left on amazing terms. They were great to me. And I still have a ton of friends who are there, including people in management who I think the world of. But what was weird about being there is, you know, you're in Bristol, Connecticut, and you're kind of in this antiseptic studio doing scores and highlights, and you never really felt a part of the games that you covered. That's very different at the Big Ten Network. I mean, I know people on all the campuses. You know, we do a preseason tour where we go watch every football team practice. I know coaches. I know assistant coaches. I get to know players a little bit. So all that stuff to me has really been cool. And you feel a part of the fabric of this conference, which means so much to people. I like the conference and these schools really matter in an incredibly personal way to the students and the alumni and the fans. And I don't think I really got that when I agreed to do the job, but people take this really personally. They care deeply about it. And so to be kind of that one person who is really blessed with the opportunity to be the voice and the eyes and the ears for 6 million living Big Ten alums, I do not take that lightly. That's really, I didn't know that that's what I was getting into, but the fact that it is what I got into has really been neat and has been incredibly gratifying.
And that's what I wanted to ask you next is, like, what was it like being on the ground floor of a network and what went into the ideas of, you know, how you wanted to build out your content leading from being a studio host? What was it like transitioning to kind of being in the studio the majority of the time? Like, what was that like for you as you made this kind of career pivot?
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, kind of the notion of at ESPN, you are a cog in the wheel. I mean, unless you're like one of the, you know, three or four guys, you know, I'm sure Scott Van Pelt, you know, is a great guy and was there when I was there. Like, I'm sure he doesn't feel like a cog in the wheel, right? He's kind of got a say of this program every day. But for those of us who are kind of in the rank and file who did, you know, I did a ton of sports centers and outside the lines and, you know, got to call. You know, I did a lot of college basketball pregame, you know, halftime, all that kind of stuff. I had a college football radio show. So there were things I had ownership of, but like when you're hosting Sports Center and it's kind of, you're just the guy who was hosting the 1 a.m. that night, along with, you know, whoever, John Anderson or whatever, you know, we came in and there's a producer and it's kind of like, all right, well, what are we going to talk about? And we had a say in it, but we didn't have a say in defining the program. Like Sports Center was defined. everyone knew what SportsCenter was going to be. That was being done well above our heads. And I think the thing that's been really cool at the Big Ten Network, that again, I didn't realize until I got there, was kind of we could be whatever we wanted to be. I mean, within certain parameters, we were to cover Big Ten sports, but sort of kind of, hey, what's our mission statement? What do we want this to be about? You know, we had a fan council for a number of years. And so I would sit in on some of those meetings and try to understand what do the fans want this network to be? And I think, you know, at ESPN, well, we always said we served the fan. And I do think that was true. But I feel like here we gave voice to the fan and tried to understand. I still try to understand what it is that the fans want to see. And I think particularly with social media, and I'm not overly active on social media. I frankly don't enjoy it that much. But certainly the barriers have been broken down and people can kind of let you know what they think of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I listen or I look at it and give some thought to it. So I think that part of it is really been cool. And again, it's been unexpected. I didn't know that's what I was getting into, but to be in on the ground floor, to kind of change the face of college sports television, I think that's really been neat. And I think if at some point in your career, if you're going to be involved in something that is, for lack of a better term, a startup, and I know that kind of carries a certain connotation in this day and age, but that's something that's new and different and that is yours, or that you play a major role in, it has been an incredibly gratifying experience.
What was one of the most gratifying times that you had at the beginning of your time with the Big Ten Network? Like, what was one of those moments where you're like, man, this is like, we're doing it right now?
I think one thing that really stands out to me, Jack, is in that first year, Ohio State played in the BCS National Championship game and back in the days of the BCS, and they lost the game. But afterward, Jim Tressel came out onto the field and sat with Jerry DiNardo and Howard Griffith and me and talked about the game for like 10 minutes on the Big Ten Network. And we thanked him profusely afterward. I mean, he had just lost the national championship game, right? Like the last thing you want to do is come out and talk to this kind of new network. And he was so great about it. I mean, he really said, hey, we want you to succeed. And that first year, you guys are too young to remember, but the first year we were not on in a lot of the cable households in the Midwest. There was a year that was really challenging and difficult where the Big Ten Network was essentially in disputes with the various cable and satellite providers. So we were on DirecTV from the very beginning, and I believe Dish, but a lot of the cable companies kind of held out and to see, you know, what would be the reaction of fans. And the reaction of fans was they were really angry and wanted to watch their Big Ten games. But so there was kind of this feeling of, you know, is this going to work? And I think that Coach Tressel coming out and sitting with us, really, to me, you know, he said, hey, you're part of, you know, your success is our success or something to that effect. And so that really meant a lot to me. And again, I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying, that we really felt a part of the fabric of these schools and that there was a responsibility to understand the schools, to understand the fan bases and to know like what goes through the mind of an Iowa fan or an Ohio State fan and to be respectful of their traditions and what makes each of these schools special. Because I think the weird thing about college sports, you know, like we're the only society in the world that does this, right? That attaches these athletic teams to their institutions of higher learning. It is such a huge part of the identity. It's the front porch of the university. It is the way that people kind of harken back and get nostalgic about their college years. And so you want to understand that. You want to treat that with respect. And so I think kind of those, that's really like an evocative moment for me where it really, I think back to it, I'm like, wow, like that was different. That was different than being at ESPN.
Being at the Big Ten Network for 15 years now, how do you kind of keep some of the content or some of the things you talk about fresh for yourself? Because obviously, you know, there's a passion that goes into it and to succeed at it, but, you know, how do you kind of stay creative with it?
Well, that's a great question, Sammy. Well, this year, for instance, we started a new show. So I've got a show every weekday that airs at 11 o'clock in Iowa, 11 a.m., Big Ten Today. And so that was something that was new and was a new project that they approached me on. And I'm really enthused about it. It's something different. You know, we had Caitlin Clark on today, you know, so like the chance to visit with student athletes that I wouldn't ordinarily get a chance to visit with. I think that's been really cool. And that's kept it fresh. I've got a new project I'm going to start working on in the spring that I'm really excited about. It's going to be kind of more along the lines of an interview show. So I'm fired up about that. But then I think the other thing is the storylines always change. And so while the games are the same, right? I mean, yeah, like they're Iowa, Nebraska, they play every single Black Friday, right? So it's like, well, here we go, another Iowa, Nebraska. But I just don't see it that way. You know, I guess I look at every season as being unique and interesting and kind of into this unknown, and that there's going to be drama, there's going to be excitement, there's going to be disappointment, there's going to be kind of all these different things that we didn't anticipate, and that there are new players and kind of, you know, new coaches and all those different things. Those things do change. And we've been fortunate to have incredible continuity. I mean, I kind of have, you know, been front and center on a lot of the stuff. There are two other studio hosts, I'm sure you know, Mike Hall and Rick Pizzo, who are awesome, who have been there from the get-go. Jerry DiNardo and Howard Griffith have been our football studio analysts literally from day one. They remain two really close friends of mine. So I think kind of all that stuff that we all see it kind of change each year, and that we're able to bounce ideas off one another and to kind of constantly be evolving and creating. I think that's kept it fresh for me. But I do think that's a totally fair question. And I've wondered that a lot in sports media. I mean, I think I wonder that about coaches too. Like, what keeps it fresh for Kirk Ferentz every year? What keeps it fresh for Pat Fitzgerald, for some of these long tenured coaches, Tom Izzo, these people who have been there for a long time? And I think you probably have to ask yourself that question periodically. And if you're not excited, if you're not energized, then maybe it's time to do something else. I haven't arrived at that point, nor do I see myself arriving at it anytime soon. I still love it every day.
And you kind of touched on it earlier, but being a part of the Big Ten Network, you've gotten to build relationships with, you know, these different college institutions and with the coaches and with all these other people. How have you gone about the relationship building process?
I think the biggest thing, Sammy, is just to show up and to care and to listen. I don't think it's really different than normal relationships. I think that I have long since ceased to be kind of, I don't know what the right word, impressed is the wrong word, intimidated is the wrong word. Let me just say this. When I was in local sports, mm-hmm. in a very small market in Texas, in my first job, the big thing that we would do that was pretty cool was we'd go down and cover the Dallas Cowboys. And the Dallas Cowboys were larger than life at that time. I mean, it was Troy Aikman, it was Michael Irvin, it was Emmitt Smith. I mean, it was like one Hall of Famer after another. And so in my very first job at age, I did a couple things before I went into sports television. So I was like 24, 25 years old. But in my very first job, here I am covering one of the most famous teams in all of sports. And I think what I came to realize is they're just people, right? Like with kind of all of the same, you know, foibles that the rest of us have. And so I very quickly kind of ceased to be intimidated by celebrity. And so I think one of the things that you have to do to have kind of a genuine relationship with people is that you have to kind of view them as some sort of a peer. And so I think I've been able to do that with a lot of these coaches. And look, their incentive is for us to view them in that way too. You know, it is a give and take relationship. And, you know, Joe Paterno was at Penn State when we first started covering the Big Ten, and Coach Paterno had recruited Jerry when Jerry was coming out of high school. Jerry ultimately went to Notre Dame, but Joe recruited him. Jerry will be quick to point out Joe did not offer him a scholarship, but they had a relationship. And so, you know, Joe has us over at his house one of the first years we were there. And you know, you get to spend some time with this guy who's a larger than life figure and understand that, you know, he's got a, whatever it is, you know, canned peaches in the basement, just like everyone else. So I think I kind of, if you view the world through that lens, you can build relationships. You know, Kirk Ferentz at his heart of hearts is just a normal guy. And he's very down to earth. And so to show him that you care, to show him that you know about his team, and that you come in well-informed, and that you work hard, and you're going to ask good questions, you're going to be fair. I think all of those things are ways to build the relationship. And that's what I try to do every day. You know, I hope that the fans and coaches look at us as being fair. and being smart and knowing what we're talking about. And shame on us if we don't know what we're talking about, because it's really not that hard to know about 14 schools and their athletic teams. I mean, this is not brain surgery here. So that's kind of what I've always strived to do, is just to be there, to listen, and to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you've gotten to travel far and wide, obviously, across the Big Ten to all the different Big Ten campuses. So one thing I was really curious to ask you is, what would your like top three favorite campuses to visit be in the Big Ten?
Man, I get asked that one a lot. I do, and I, like, this is going to sound like, I always say we have 14 children and we love them all equally. So, which is, you know, somewhat of a political statement, I guess, right? But I would also just say, I have fun everywhere we go. Like, for, you know, it depends what you're defining it on. Like, natural beauty. I mean, man, it's hard to beat Penn State's campus. It's really gorgeous. You know, Madison. Obviously, the setting for Northwestern is spectacular. But, you know, like, I mean, we go to Iowa City and you go to Joseph's and get a steak, and you walk around the campus and walk down by the river and see the old Capitol. And I love it. You know, I love going in that pedestrian mall and just wandering around and seeing all walks of life there, you know, coming together. So, I mean, look, that's what it is, right? I love college towns. I love the energy. I love being in, you know, walking through and going through a tailgate and seeing people getting fired up and ready for the game. It just means so much to people. And I guess I've kind of never lost the wonder of that, of the pageantry of it all, of hearing the marching band, of seeing the wave in Iowa City. What an amazing tradition that is. You know, I just think there's so much ancillary stuff that goes on. And I just, at the end of the day, I love college towns. So are some of them more beautiful than others? Do some have better restaurants than others? Are some easier to get to than others? Like, I'm at the age now where how hard it is to get there is something that can change my ranking a little bit. But at the end, whenever I do get there, I'm always happy to be there and disappointed to leave.
What's one underrated town then? One that you don't think gets enough respect?
I would honestly say Iowa City is right up there. Like, I don't think people understand what a cool and vibrant place it is, how much natural beauty there is there. I would say, like, if you went out to, you know, kind of pick a place in America outside the Midwest and said, describe Iowa City, Iowa to me, I don't think many people would be anywhere close to what it is. So I would say that's one. That I don't think kind of get, because people talk about Madison a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Madison is kind of, oh, that's the consummate college town. It is great. But I don't think that people understand, you know, Bloomington, I think, is one that, you know, man, when you're there, I mean, it just kind of has this such a collegiate feel. And I don't think people always understand quite how nice it is. So, yeah, I'd say maybe those two on my all underrated team.
I love Sam. Just a quick aside. He hasn't made mention of Champaign, so I just wanted to make note of this.
I was born in Champaign.
Really?
No respect
for your birthplace then.
Yeah, so let's not be dogging Champaign.
I'm not dogging Champaign. You're the one that's never mentioned it.
I would say Champaign has, I had a ton of friends who went there because I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. I did not find it to be a particularly appealing place to visit when I was in school, when I go down and visit my buddies. I think it's significantly better than it was. I think, like, it has a great collegiate feel. I think you walk through that Greek row, walk through the quad there. It's great. I think downtown Champaign has improved by leaps and bounds. The hotels have improved significantly in Champaign. And man, you can't beat the atmosphere going to a game at the State Farm Center. That is a special place to watch basketball.
I will say, I went to Champaign on my way to the Big Ten Championship in Indy in December, and I had very, very low expectations for Champaign from what I heard from all my Illinois friends. And I visited, and I was like, it exceeded my expectations. It really exceeded my expectations.
It's very flat from what I remember when I took my visit. Am I wrong in saying that? It's just a very flat area.
It is very flat.
Yeah.
Illinois is very flat. You guys may have noticed the state growing up here.
Believe me,
this is a flat state. In fact, I grew up like three blocks from this little, it was like there was a very small hill at the end of my block. I mean, literally, you could ride up this hill on 10th gear on a 10 speed and not break a sweat. So, I mean, this is not a significant hill. And at the top of that hill, just like two houses over, lived a friend of mine. And they had a plaque on their garage because it was the highest point in Cook County. And I am not kidding you guys. Like, the elevation on this hill was like 50 feet. I mean, it's absurd how flat Illinois is. So
I have to say, I have to make the flat statement, because there is a hill here on Iowa City's campus that is notorious for breaking people's legs, backs, making them sweat profusely during the summer, because it's just treacherous having to go up and down that thing in the 90 degree heat. Illinois, you don't have that problem. You have that. They do have a beautiful like quad green area. The squirrels are uber friendly, the students, which that's the one thing I did notice. I'm glad you laughed. They were really, like, really interested with me, and it was beyond me. But
maybe you were emanating some sort of an odor or something. I mean, it's hard to know what you've been up to. Yeah.
Well, it is known on this podcast I don't shower as regular as most humans do, so the squirrels might have picked up on that.
Seeing as you never go to basketball games, I mean, do you ever leave the apartment?
No, actually, like, sometimes I'm afraid to, because of my odor. It just, you know, you never know. But hey, I am excited to go tonight. I don't know what to expect.
I hope it works out for you.
Yeah, I'm hope you're right for one of those takes that you made and that they actually pulled out. I mean, Iowa needs a big win. Oh, truth be told, all jokes aside, they do. They need something that this team can actually like say, all right, we have this, let's keep building. They've had good wins. I'm not saying they haven't, but they need one to like hang their hat on and go, okay, we've done this, you know? And I don't know if there's a better time than tonight. It just feels like a good night.
Zero quad one wins.
I know. So, and I don't know what quad one means. What does that mean? Can you explain it to me?
Yes. So those are wins at home over the top 75 in the net rankings.
No, that's not good.
No, top 35 in the net rankings at home.
Well,
top 75 on the road, and not top good. 50, I think, in neutral. So basically, it's have you beaten good teams?
So have you beaten a tournament team?
Yeah. Not so good. You probably need a couple of those to make the tournament.
Yeah, I'd say tonight's a good start.
So I have two final questions for you before we wrap up. One of my questions is, you're from the northern suburbs of Chicago, so I have to ask you, like, what is your go-to Chicago restaurant? Like, out of the big suburban restaurants and everything.
One restaurant in all of Chicago.
It's a toughie.
That is my go-to restaurant.
In the suburbs.
In the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
I mean, like, growing up, my go-to restaurant was Little Louie's Hot Dog Stand.
Okay.
It was and remains one of the all-time great spots. Now, it's changed significantly, unfortunately.
It has.
They moved in a little more modern building, which I think is a shame. The grease at the bottom of the bag with the French fries is not as kind of obvious as it was back in the day. But yeah, that was my go-to. Chicago's an unbelievable restaurant town. I mean, you know, you can't go wrong. And I mean, they're just like, there are almost too many good restaurants to mention, but I'm going to give Little Louie's a shout because that was my childhood go-to spot.
Little Louie's is a great pick. And my other final question for you is, what is advice that you have for aspiring journalists, college students, people who want to get into sports media?
I think my advice to people who want to get into sports media is probably twofold. I think the first piece of advice would be to go for it and to do everything you can to give yourself the best opportunity to succeed. I think what you guys are doing right now is great. You know, the barriers to entry are very different than they were when I was your age. I mean, to sound like an old guy, but I am old. You know, for me, if I wanted to, there was no such thing as podcasting, right? I mean, if I wanted to kind of hone my craft, I had to find somewhere that would put me on the air. I mean, the beauty of what you guys are doing is this is a way to practice, right? And hey, along the way, maybe you hit a home run and it takes off and it's a way to kind of start building your career. But at a minimum, it's a way for you to kind of figure out, hey, how do you do this? And you just get reps. And so if you want to be on air, I would say you go somewhere where they'll put you on air. I, I tell this story a lot. When I was at ESPN, I'm not sure why, but I felt like I was the go-to guy for these production assistants who would say, you know, hey, Dave, can we go to lunch one day? I'd really have a few questions I want to ask you. Yeah, okay. So I go to lunch with the production assistant who was fresh out of whatever school, and their job was like running the teleprompter and cutting tapes and, you know, whatever it was. And they would always say, you know, I really want to do what you do. I want to be on air. And, you know, what should I do? And I always said to them, well, the first thing you need to do is go in and quit your job tomorrow, because you're never going to be on air if you stay here. Like, they're not going to go into the room where you're cutting highlights and say, you know, Rich Eisen is sick. We need you to come host the 11. You know, Bob, cutting the highlight. Like, come do it. It doesn't work that way. So you need to go somewhere where they'll put you on the air if that's what you want to do. You want to be a producer, go somewhere where you can produce a show. It doesn't matter where it is. I mean, I started in Sherman, Texas, and I was in the Quad Cities, Davenport, Iowa, and you know, Rock Island, Illinois, that area, right on the Mississippi River there. So those jobs were invaluable just in terms of, you know, kind of how do you do this and how do I get better? The way to get better is to do the job and to do it over and over and over, and to make mistakes and to figure out what you did wrong and not do it wrong the next time. And then the other thing I would say is have a plan B. And I don't mean to sound discouraging in any way, but it is a really tough field. And I spent a lot of time figuring out what I might do if it didn't work out, because there were certainly times where I believed fervently that it wasn't going to work out, where I sent out tons of tapes and didn't get any kind of response, and just felt like I was kind of treading water in a town, you know, certainly in the first market I lived in Sherman, Texas. It wasn't a town I necessarily saw myself settling down in, with no disrespect to Sherman. It was just a small town. It wasn't where I envisioned, you know, living, being someone from a big city and having lived in New York previous to that. So, you know, kind of constantly thinking of, well, what else could I do? And I applied to a bunch of other grad school programs, that kind of thing. So I would say, don't put all your eggs in one basket, but go for it, you know, pursue it, see where it gets you. Give yourself some sort of an artificial time frame, whether it's 3 years or 5 years, to check in and say, okay, where am I now? Is it heading in a direction I want it to head in? If not, what can I do to change it? And if I don't think I'm gonna be able to change it, what else can I do? But I always said to myself, at least I will be able to say, you know what, you gave it a shot and you tried to make this thing work. And then if it didn't work out, it wasn't gonna be because of a lack of effort. It was gonna be because of a lack of talent, which perhaps I've overcome. But again, that would be my kind of two-pronged piece of advice.
Awesome, Dave. Awesome. We can't thank you enough for coming on and taking the time today to talk with us. Do you have socials that you want to plug it here at the end, just for anyone if they want to find you?
I mean, I am on Twitter, yeah, at BTN Dave Revson. I would consider it one of the more boring follows on Twitter. But
why do you say that? You got to give yourself a little credit. It's not how you sell yourself.
But here's what I'd say: if you're interested in college football history and you haven't read The Opening Kickoff, The Tumultuous Birth of a Football Nation, what the heck are you doing? It was a New York Times bestseller. So that's probably the thing I'm proudest of.
Is that right over your left shoulder right there?
Yes, book I wrote about 8 years ago. That's the thing I would like to promote. If you want to follow me on Twitter,
gotcha,
by all means, do it. Hey, Jack, I got a piece of advice for you. Okay. Like, you know that Carver Hawkeye, I mean, the stairs are really steep, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you're going to have to walk up those stairs.
Yeah.
At the end of the day today. Pace yourself tonight. Don't do anything crazy.
Get your snacks pre-game, Jack.
Well, now, Dave, this is a little nice fun thing. They do sell adult sodas in the arena now. So that's a dangerous combo for any college student.
And you're
old
enough to consume one of those legally, I would guess, right?
That's why we're talking about it. Yes, sir.
All right. Don't do anything too crazy, right?
Of course.
You don't want to be the guy who falls down the stairs and then has to go across the street to the hospital. That would be a bad way to end your day.
But this could be a foreshadowing, a tease or something. If they do ask me to do the half court shot, I am going to miss and fall on my face on purpose. I've told Sam this. I'm going to miss it terribly on purpose. I have to. It's the only way I could maybe get myself noticed and get a little, you know, publicity. So, hey, right, I'll do it.
I'll be watching with bated breath.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Can't thank you enough.
All right, fellas. Great.